New lights appear on the horizon and new discoveries are heralded far and wide, while the tomes of the old masters are forgotten or ignored and dismissed as the product of an unenlightened period, yet therein may be found many learned discourses upon the very same subjects which are uppermost among the great thinkers of today. Among the forgotten writings are many accounts of visits to other worlds and descriptions of life on other planets. More recently, the great German mystic Jacob Laub wrote extensively of the people of Mars, stating that they lived a rather primitive but spiritual life, dwelling in peace and harmony with each other, as children of the One Father. This statement will become more significant as we proceed, especially so because the general opinion seems to have been for centuries that the people of Mars could only be a martial warlike people bent on conquest and destruction. This conception sprang from the association of the name of the planet with Ares, the Greek god of war. The Romans evidently adopted him bodily. While Ares was a son of God. 27. Zeus. And a consort of Aphrodite, goddess of love and beauty, there is nothing but the mythology and associated astrology to link him with the actual planet Mars or Aphrodite with the planet Venus. The ancients cast their gods upon the heavens and found their images among the stars and taught their mystery lore by this means, but they were not stupid enough to think that the planet Mars was the abode of warlike people under the leadership of the god of war. That remained for a later generation with less knowledge and more superstition. The soothsayers and astrologers, who in ancient times were concerned only with national events, basing their predictions upon the positions and motions of the planets, could only conclude that the influence of Mars led to war, just as in our day many think that mere possession of a strong army would lead to war. This, of course, is a fallacy, for the result depends upon the disposition, will and desire of the people possessing the strength. A strong armed force could be a great deterrent to warfare, and according to modern astrologers, Mars merely indicates strength and dynamic energy, both good qualities for the peace-loving people as well. It is, of course, regrettable that a planet and its people should be so slandered that their emissary should find it necessary to protest our attitude toward them upon the occasion of his first contact with us. The tendency of our radio, television and motion. 28. Picture script writers and producers to regard H. G. Wells' War of the Worlds and Orson Welles' Lay, Invasion from Mars' master pattern for all of their themes is too obvious to require comment. The latest insult to the gods of love and her planet is a movie entitled Attack from Venus. How the Venusians must deplore this charge against friendly, gentle people who, we are told, have already come to us and wish to make a sojourn here. No wonder the people who claim to have contacted them plead with us to extend a friendly welcome to them. It would seem to be time for a change. Perhaps after all the people of other planets may not be quite so much like us, perhaps they do have other interests than real estate, industry, commerce and warfare. Perhaps they may even have seen the futility of the struggle and have developed other interests which are less competitive and thus have learned how to dwell in peace with their fellowmen. From what we have learned from those who have made contact with them, this is the case. Many are convinced that. Herein lies the solution to most of our difficulties. While it would be unwise to ignore the possibility that there may be inimical forces and creatures or perhaps even people in other parts of the universe, we should not start out with the assumption that all visitors from outer space are bent on our destruction. We certainly do not know all about everything that. 29. They exist in the space surrounding us, and there is no need to relax our vigilance just because we have learned that friendly space visitors have arrived or are on their way here. For aught we know, there may be some types of unfriendly flying saucer, but so far they have not been in evidence, although a few people have had experiences which have led them to that conclusion. But it must be remembered that the space visitors are strangers here and may not be too sure what kind of a reception to expect from us, and so might, in some cases, take some defensive precaution. This is generally understood by people who have attempted to make contact with the saucer people. Consequently, nearly all of them feel that the title Flying Saucers on the Attack was an unfortunate choice for Harold Wilkins' very comprehensive and informative work, for it is somewhat misleading and tends to create the impression that the saucers are our enemies, whereas they wish us to regard them as friends. Perhaps, when man gets into the saucer enterprise, we may yet have enemy saucer-like aircraft, or even spacecraft, to contend with, but until that time let us continue to look forward with pleasant anticipation to the friendly visits of our neighbors in space. The landing which we are about to describe has one thing in common with all flying saucer contacts: it took place in a remote and deserted place where 30 uninvited witnesses would not be likely to appear or interfere. Possibly there are other considerations such as the proximity to fault lines, magnetic centers, etc., but the choice of such sites and the absence of witnesses always prove embarrassing to the person making the contact, not only because he lacks evidence to support his story, making it difficult to get anyone to believe him, but also in some countries unauthorized communication with an inhabitant of another planet is considered to be in the same category as communication with a foreign power or an enemy country, and is strictly prohibited by law. This would not be likely to disturb the space people, but accounts for the fact that not many contacts are reported, and but for a fortuitous chain of circumstances no one would have heard about the one recorded here. This case is remarkable in many ways. First, the man who made the contact was a spiritually minded man, highly educated and a careful observer. Also, he was wide awake and alert, and had not been sleeping, when he saw the saucer and its Martian occupant, which disposes of one explanation frequently offered. Then again, he sought no publicity, which is not the case with many others who have been visited by beings from outer space. In fact, he did not dare to report his experience. But being somewhat overwhelmed, he could not refrain from telling a few friends. 31. The Martian, too, seems to have been of an usually advanced type, not at all like the Martian described by Cedric Allingham in Flying Saucer from Mars. 8. Tall man, very much like one of our own airmen. That our Martian visitor was no ordinary person is evidenced by the fact that he was luminous in the early evening light and had the countenance of an angel. Certainly not even all Martians are like that. But most important of all, he had quite evidently developed the third eye, for the observer first noticed only a luminous spot then. There came forth from it an ethereal feeler like the antenna of a snail. While this is seldom seen with ordinary sight, its description is recognized by those possessing etheric vision. The third eye is not merely a vestigial organ of past generations. Rather, it is a future development of humanity, manifesting to a degree in a considerable number of advanced souls of the present generation. And accounts for some of the unusual faculties possessed by certain individuals. Our Martian friend being one of them, certainly is in the vanguard of the race. His ability to wordlessly convey his thought is eloquent testimony to his own attainment. But he has made a severe indictment of our present-day civilization and its leaders, such as is seldom heard from a contemporary. Happily, a spaceman is immune from reprisal from those who do not like his criticisms. 32. Many people might well envy the Martian his ability to see the overall picture by means of his extended vision, but more his ability to speak his mind with impunity. For tyranny and slavery have not yet vanished from off the earth, and in many places behind the iron and bamboo curtains it is not possible to air one's views. Fortunately, we have some freedom here in our own country, but we should nevertheless remember eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. Our liberties have been hard won and should not be lightly surrendered. What happens when that is done is quite apparent in the world today. But humanity as a whole is not to blame. The crafty and unscrupulous will doubtless always find their victims and take the lion's share, but the villains need not always get the upper hand. Soon the day shall come when their deeds shall all be known and there will be no longer any place to hide. Small wonder that so many hope and pray for the day of deliverance, of divine intervention, or perchance, for a fleet of spacecraft to take them to a place of safety before the day of reckoning when few men shall survive. But now let us see how it looks to a Martian spaceman, as communicated to our correspondent, while camping in that lonely spot high in the mountains of Austria. His letter follows. 33. The letter. Nothing much seems to happen here, yet I had an experience which towers above all else. I have told you in former letters that I have a great love for sleeping in the open, especially during my occasional wanderings which take me over meadows, mountains, rocks and woods. And always I make it a point to spend the night in the open. The woods, as you know, is a great source of ozone, and the ozone of the mountains and woods refreshes my entire body, heart and soul. I awaken in the early morning hours, and a new joy fills my heart. And new forces flow through my whole being. Then, I hurry over the meadows, wet with morning dew, through the awakening woods, even before the sun sends down its glowing rays of light. Now the border line between Austria and Steiner Mitteldeutsch is composed of an ancient massive rock formation, having an altitude of about 4,600 feet. The name of this vast mountain range is Change or High Change, because the weather there is always changing. On one side you will see the sun shining and on the other side it will be raining. On this mountain. 34. The stand, separated at great distances, only three tourist homes. The tourists here keep very much to the beaten paths and seldom wander off alone on the paths that lead to the Alp meadows. Therefore the territory around this region is very lonely and you could spend weeks without ever seeing a human being. About a month ago I was up there under the dwarf pines, and that particular evening after I ate the supper I had brought with me, I used the last rays of the sun to make some notes in my diary, and then wrapped myself in my tent blanket and thought about the happenings of the day and made plans for the following one. The purpose of my wanderings is the study of lonely places of which there are told tales of mysterious and occult happenings. I try to collect mood pictures. I lie relaxed and still in the great stillness about me and await the appearance of the stars. The deep gazing into the starry heavens Mitteldeutsch makes one realize the smallness of man and keeps one humble and thoughtful. I was not yet asleep. I was too tired after my long march which requires strength and endurance. Nor was I dreaming with open eyes. I am aware of the slightest noise. And when I today reread in my diary about the incredible happening that was about to take place, and to think about it, I can scarcely believe it myself, that I should have experienced this. 35. Wondrous, strange event only a short time ago, and that I should be a witness of an event that, for me, has become of outstanding significance. I was gazing at the evening sky. Already twilight had set in and nature was enveloping itself in an opalescent veil. Yet I could still make out the trees in my immediate vicinity, clearly and distinctly, and the first stars were just appearing. Then it happened. Slowly, and absolutely without the slightest noise, a strange object lowered itself gently towards the earth and landed about 150 feet away from me. It was a strange, beautiful thing that had the shape of one of those circular, luminous balls one hangs on Christmas trees, but of gigantic size. It was about 20 feet across, and silvery in color. As there twilight deepened, its luminosity increased. At first, it had been quite dim. I jumped up, staring at this wonder as one transfixed. Its reality could not be doubted. There, in my immediate vicinity in the midst of all the night's loneliness, miles away from any human habitation. Upon the ground before me, there was a flying saucer, a secret mysterious flying machine from an other world. Now we have been hearing about these strange and unidentifiable flying objects in the newspapers. 36. A curious mixture of truth and fancy. America has teently been known to have issued the news that beings from other planets are visiting our Earth for some reason. I recall having read strange descriptions of these beings which the journalists describe. Some described them as overdeveloped frogmen of human size. Others have made an elephant's nose of their noses. Others described them as human beings, but of all sorts of grotesque shapes and sizes. All of this was revolving in my head as I stood gazing at the flying saucer, when all of a sudden, the lid of this strange machine was lifted, and a luminous being issued forth. Slowly and carefully he stepped from his machine, which grew more and more luminous. But he too was luminous. His entire body seemed to be enveloped by a sort of aura which radiated a deep and most beautiful shade of blue. This color had a most soothing effect on my eyes, and on my whole being, so that I opened my hands and with outstretched arms proceeded to approach this wondrous being with slow and measured steps. Then I began to see his face. It was a human face, similar to ours, but an expression like that of an angel, and of a strange but mild beauty. The eyes were larger than those of us humans, but they radiated power, kindness and goodness simultaneously. The nose was smaller and the mouth seemed barely indicated. On the forehead I could 37. see a round and very luminous dot, which seemed to grow larger and take on the shape of an antenna, somewhat like that of a giant snail. Actually this luminous ethereal feeler seemed to grow larger and larger, and moved about as though seeking in the air in the direction in which I stood, now motionless. Then he too remained still and thus we both stood still, as though hypnotized. He wore a tight garment, closely adhering to his body, that enveloped head, hands and feet. Only the face was uncovered and free. The material of the suit seemed as though made of spun glass. His legs were very thin and the arms like our own. His hands and fingers seemed to be very muscular. Now, all of a sudden, the figure came to life. Slowly he approached me, lifted his arms high and as he came close to me, laid his hands upon my head. And thus we remained standing a long time. Then I felt as though his feeling organ touched me on the forehead between the eyes, directly above the nose. And it was as though a new sense had awakened within me. I could comprehend the thoughts and messages, which his mouth did not pronounce, perhaps could not. But I knew immediately, intuitively, what this being had to convey to me. Yet no speech was necessary. I understood immediately, just as long as he touched me with his antenna, which was perceived by me, not as cold or moist, but of extra. 38. Ordinary delicacy and pleasantness, and I sensed his thoughts as a stream of fire pouring through me. As I later realized, he used the short duration of a dream, so quickly did it all happen. Then he lowered his hands, remained motionless for a short time, and then placed his right hand over my heart and turned away, stepped into his wondrous flying machine which slowly arose and disappeared quickly before my very eyes. Now I must emphasize the fact that I definitely understood his inaudible speech, if it may be so called, and I shall endeavor to clothe the context of his speechless message in words. One thing is certain, thinking as such is never bound by any language. One sense that you are differently constituted from your fellowmen. Therefore E1 will reveal to you who we are and what our purpose is on Earth. Yes, we came from the star that you call Mars. Why do you name our planet after a god of war? Why do you fear that we will bring disaster and new wars? Yes, it is true that our planet is older than yours and more highly evolved. We have progressed further in science but also further in our inmost being. We love peace above all things and know vaguely that in the hoary past there was such a thing as war in which human beings for the sake of unimportant. 39. Middle dot and worthless things, wound and dismember each other and only because a few so-called sub-dot-ermen have willed it. I am astonished to learn that you are still living in this most primitive condition and that this most unholy and sinful thing is clothed in words of virtue, so that men may more quickly become excited about it. You speak of honor, of necessary sacrifice. On the battlefield. You speak of Leth, E to your rulers and of tyrants who kill those who do not and cannot understand. But he who makes the sacrifices demanded by war and loses his Allah is forthright forgotten after the war has ended. I feel the question in your heart, how have we come to know all this? Surely you know that we have been coming to earth for a long time, that we encircle the earth, and we do not have to learn the various languages of men. We have evolved to the point where we can read thoughts, and this is due to the fact that we possess an organ which you also possess but have neglected until it has atrophied. It is the third eye. Just as you can expand your vision by means of optical instruments and thus can see into immense distances, so we also have tools and instruments by means of which we can see immense distances. But we also have the third eye, and this single eye is not merely used for seeing, but with it we can also hear, or rather, we can become aware of everything that transpires in men's hearts. 40. W. Whether it be joy, happiness, irritation, dissatisfaction or anger. We do not come as your enemies, we want to help you to ban these unholy crises on earth that occur again and again, so that you poor human beings shall at last attain to that lasting peace and happiness which we possess. You have remained backward in science to such an extent that you use it mainly to destroy mankind. And this is not the fault of humanity, but solely the fault of a few human beings who enslave you and feed you with false words and concepts, and who do not live in truth. They have given you great ideals and systems of religions, but none of these so-called lords live according to these ideals. On the contrary, they sneer at them and drag them around in the mud. But woe be unto you if you do likewise, for then you shall stand before the tribunal and you shall be burned like living torches for having desecrated a god. And the judges themselves do not believe in a god. They only know the dead letter of Thesaur law books. Zero, how unhappy you are, because your so-called .ed free will is forever being shackled with new speeches and high-sounding words while being derided. And so that why you shall more easily succumb to this disgrace, begs view alcohol and tobacco, which are taxed by these high lords, so that you have to earn and pay for your shame and disgrace. 41. My friend, all this have we become a war, of by witnessing the radiations or vibrations that issue forth from the hearts of men. We know everything that is transpiring on this earth, and we often have to go back into our own past in order to understand these horrors, which devour the tiny little bit of happiness you have here, just as ants eat up what is strewn in their path. We will help you. And in the near future you will stand face to face with events that shall fill you with wonder, but which you will greet with joy as soon as you comprehend their true significance. And so that you may do so, we will help you. And now, goodbye. That which I have made known to you in my own way, that freely give out to others after what you would call a month. God bless you. These were the words, or rather the vibrations, that he conveyed to me and which I have endeavored to put into words. I repeat, he did not speak. I have only tried to translate his message into our language. Dear friend, this was the greatest experience that I have ever had in this life that I was privileged to experience. The following day and I remained in this self-same spot 2 days longer, for I had brought food with me. I wrote down my observations in my diary. And about these I would like to add a few personal comments. 42. What would happen if such a flying saucer should land in a city or village? And supposing it is seen by all men? First of all, the police would come running and ask the being for his passport. If he does not have any to show, he would be arrested. And since one cannot speak with him, he would be delivered to the ones in high positions who will have him measured and lock him up in a cage, feed him by force, and when he dies, they will preserve his body in alcohol to be dissected at a later date. Thirdly, if he is not immediately taken away by the authorities, he would be surrounded by the people who would treat him like an animal in a zoo. I have also made some other notes, that I would rather not tell you about. In short, when the man from Mars approaches us in peace and love, then he is lost. The political parties, if all goes well, would seek to make use of him, and each would try to make some kind of a deal with him to find out if it were possible to have military outposts on Mars from which they might shoot at their enemies. Yet perhaps, and this I believe perhaps, we do not yet know all the possible powers that these men from Mars may make use of. They will know how to protect themselves, otherwise they would have landed long ago and would have shown themselves to the people. 43. In conclusion, it is quite evident from the message conveyed to the writer of the letter just quoted that the Martian did not have a very flattering opinion of the conditions he found in our world of today. Not only did he criticize and denounce our attitude toward our visitors from outer space, but also our hypocrisy, conceit and selfishness in all walks of life come in for their share of his condemnation. Even religion and politics are not exempt. Small wonder that our correspondent wanted no part in the publication of such a communication. But from our point of view, there is much to justify their Martian visitor in his scathing denunciation of conditions. In the first place, we all deplore war as much as he, yet somehow we seem to be always on the verge of it. Even today we are sitting on top of an atomic powder keg, but happily no one dares to explode it. Not even the tyrants he so loudly condemns are willing to risk the consequences of the new kind of total war. Thus we may be able to learn what not even history could teach us. But what we need most to learn from our Martian friend is how to dwell in peace with all our fellow men. If 44. They have learned this secret, they certainly have progressed further than we. In ages to come, perhaps we too will be able to say that we can vaguely remember a primitive people who thought war glorious and to die upon the battlefield for one's country a signal honor. But that would be a memory long buried beneath the debris of total war and atom bomb destruction. With these two agencies passed the last vestige of the feudal lord's glory. For no longer were kings and princes exempt, and generals could not keep out of the way. Even bankers could not profit from such a calamity. When we can look back upon this nightmare, as did the Martian, from the promised land of happiness and lasting peace, then we too will share his secret, the understanding and love of his fellowmen. True, the Martian does not blame humanity at large for the plight of the people of Earth, but rather the few who have led and betrayed mankind with deceits, sophistries and false concepts. These he finds have so enslaved mankind that they cannot themselves discover the truth, new shackles being forged, in new speeches and high-sounding words, as soon as the old are removed. While he says the Martians have long known all this and have been coming here for a long time, they did a lot until now see a way to help. But now they foresee events which will fill us with wonder, there. 45. True significance of which they will make plain to us, and when we comprehend these events we will greet them joyously. And then the Martians will stand with us and help us. The awakening of the third eye has ever revealed the selfsame truths now proclaimed in no uncertain terms by visitors from outer space, for the Martian is not alone in pointing out the errors of our ways and the direction which humanity must take for emancipation or even survival. Seers and prophets have always had premonition and prevision of the fate of humanity, but seldom could they do anything about it, for what was shown to them was to transpire in the far distant future. Others found their utterances so unpalatable to the ruling classes that they were compelled to conceal the import of their prophecies in cryptic phrases to be deciphered by later generations with the author safe from the rack or guillotine. While we have in general progressed beyond this condition, it is still decidedly unhealthy to voice opinions of variance with the political or religious administration of our respective lands, and in a large segment of the world individual deviation is as ruthlessly suppressed as it ever was during the so-called Dark Ages. That the time is ripe for relief from this oppression by some form of divine intervention as set forth in 46. The various prophetic utterances of seers both ancient and modern is evidenced by the widespread hope for a sign in the heavens of the fulfillment of prophecy. Thus many see in the coming of the flying saucers and other appearances of the space people, the heralds of the return of Christ. Others see in the coming of the great white chief among the Indians the precursor to the return of the 10 lost tribes who are believed to have been taken to another planet from which they shall return to take part in the building of Zion, the city of peace. Further particulars of this mysterious movement among the Indians may be found in a manuscript entitled The Coming of the Great White Chief. That humanity is approaching a time of crisis is indeed evidenced on all sides, and particularly by the outpouring of warning and prophetic messages from outer space and from the people of other worlds.